Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last March, Kadari Johnson, a 16-year-old who lived in Burlington, Iowa, was murdered. The murder received national attention over questions of whether or not it was a hate crime. Johnson was gender fluid. Sometimes he identified as male, sometimes female. And this horrible crime got a lot of people thinking about the dangers and challenges that face transgender young people in Iowa. And one of the results is the first transgender education summit in the state. It takes place on Friday in Des Moines. The summit has been organized by Iowa Safe Schools. And with me now is Nate Munson, Executive Director for Iowa Safe Schools. Hi, Nate.
Hi, Charity. How's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Tell me about the catalyst for putting this summit together. Obviously, this terrible crime made you start thinking about resources, but what made you think we really need to bring people together?
Well, our organization receives phone calls pretty much every day about how to support transgender students. It could be something like which restroom to use. It could be something with a bullying situation. And our organization worked really closely with the Gay Straight Alliance in Burlington and helping get that started. And so we had conversations with some of the students there. And so it just kind of evolved into we need to do more. And we need to make sure that educators and schools are following Iowa's law, including our civil rights law. And so we thought a summit would be the best approach to do that.
Do we have an understanding of how many students there are in Iowa who identify as transgender?
You know, there's different studies about that, but one survey that I saw recently had that 50% of millennials believe that gender is fluid, and there's some fluidity to gender and sexuality. And so, you know, sometimes you see the number of 1%, sometimes you see higher, but this next generation really sees gender and sexuality very differently, which puts a different spin on that traditional way of thinking of transgender identity.
So, to ask the question again, do we have an idea of how many young people, in spite of how people might think about gender, but how many young people who might identify as part of the trans community?
You know, again, some of those studies will have like 1%. It's kind of hard in Iowa, you know, in some places that do ask questions on demographics. So in Iowa, we do not ask the question, but some of our neighboring states like Minnesota and Wisconsin do on student surveys will ask, like, what gender do you identify as? And they'll give options of male, female, or M to F, male to female, or female to male, transgender. And you see about 1 to 3%. We think it's actually pretty unusual when a school district now doesn't have a transgender student that includes elementary through high school. It seems to be more the norm for a school district to have at least one student who's out.
Well, and I can imagine with some of the smaller school districts in Iowa, there may be one or two students who identify as part of this community. And it seems that with that small a number, the challenges would be even greater.
Yeah. So for our students, in especially our rural communities, they may not have resources or access to information like we would hope they would have. And so that becomes a big challenge for school districts. A lot of districts in rural Iowa are doing the right thing. They are supporting their students. They are following the law. But then it comes to things like transitioning for the students. How to transition? Where can I get healthcare resources? Where can I get mental health resources? As well as finding support for their parents that's out there.
When you hear from folks in rural school districts who are trying to do the right thing, trying to support their students, what kinds of questions are they asking you?
The biggest question is usually around, like, we have a student who is transitioning, now what? Or they'll kind of reveal what the process has been so far. And oftentimes they just look to see if they're doing the right thing. And I'm really proud to say, you know, a lot of districts are doing the right thing for their students. They're allowing them to use the pronouns that they identify with, to go by the name that they would prefer, and getting their information updated. Very rarely do we have districts now that are not following the law, but we still sometimes do. But for the most part, districts just want to know, are we doing the right thing?
Well, and is there some confusion about what the laws are?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Iowa has had gender identity in our civil rights law for since 2007. And there was some confusion when the federal government under President Obama came up with some guidance in May of 2016. And then when President Trump's administration rescinded that guidance, we had to keep, you know, telling districts that nothing has changed, actually. We should still be following Iowa law. And we're very grateful to have that protection in place.
When you started to put the summit together, what were the topics that you felt were most pressing that, that schools really need access to?
The biggest one that, and actually the opening session, is a parent panel. We thought it was so important to hear from parents of transgender students. What is their experience? What was their kind of thought process? Because sometimes we have a student that will come out as trans and the district will say, well, the parent's not supportive. What do we do? And so it's really important to hear that journey of parents and how they've evolved themselves. And so that was the top priority. You know, obviously we have a panel on the law and we have some other great resources on mental health and victim advocacy as well.
What about educating other members of the community? Because I think, you know, for a lot of people, this is still something that, that is very foreign to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, we want to give some of that 101 information, too. I think, you know, when you think about the transgender identity, people oftentimes think about those old talk shows like Jerry Springer, or it could be Sally Jesse or one of those. And it's kind of this comical way of looking at a trans person. But really, what we want to do is show that transgender individuals are our neighbors, they're our coworkers, they're our students, and they're just like all of the rest of us. And here's their identity and here's been their journey. And how can we support them and ensure Iowa is a welcoming place for all individuals?
Who's coming to the summit?
So we have about close to 300 registrations, mostly educators and administrators. We do have some mental health folks, some policymakers as well. You know, there's been some interest from even some gubernatorial campaigns to show up, which is actually pretty exciting to see that evolution in our society where even politicians want to be a part of something like this.
And as far as schools go, is this something that you feel more middle school, high schools are needing the resources for? Is this something that, that really crosses all of the age groups?
It really does cross all the age groups. We even have a session at the summit that's going to focus on elementary students because we do get a lot of calls on the elementary level. Students start to identify with their gender identity as young as 2 or 3 years old. And so we have students who have transitioned in preschool and kindergarten and first grade, and that can be a difficult process because people think that's too young. But really, that's when we start to identify our gender, and so it's important to have those resources.
Nate Munson is with me. He's executive director of Iowa Safe Schools. Iowa Safe Schools is holding the very first transgender education summit in the state. It takes place on Friday in Des Moines. He's going to stay with us through the hour, and you are welcome to join the conversation as well if this is part of your experience or the experience of a loved one. If you have questions, give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Jess Orcutt is the director and one of the founders of Transcend North Iowa. It's a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming individuals. And she is with me. Hello, Jess.
Hi, Jesse.
Thanks so much for being on the show. And this is a very personal journey for you as well. So I'd love to start with your story. You are the mother of an 18-year-old son who came out as trans about 3 years ago. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah. So he's always kind of been very open about his sexuality and his gender identity. And we've always been very supportive of that. And when he was about 12 or 13, he started to question whether he was cisgender or gender fluid. And he kind of explored that for a couple of years. And when he was 15, he came to us actually with a letter and said that he was transgender and wanted to be in the transitioning process. And so that was something that wasn't completely out of the blue, but was still a little bit unexpected. And so we sort of dove into that journey with him.
So this was something that, as you said, he had been thinking about for a while, for a few years before coming out as transgender. But as a parent, tell me about your process. How did you work through this?
So it was pretty interesting. I had a little bit of a grief period, which I later found out was pretty normal, where I just felt like I was losing a child. You know, I was losing this person that I had raised and that I had grown to love and loved, you know, from the beginning. But and, you know, we were very close, and I really was afraid that we weren't going to have that closeness anymore. But it was pretty quick. Within this, probably a 2-week period, I realized that my child hadn't changed who he was. He was just using different pronouns and a different name. And it was really exciting for me as a parent to see how he really became himself. He was living honestly. He was living truthfully. And to see him flourish like that was just one of the best things that I could have experienced as a parent.
How did this work within the rest of your family?
His father is very, very supportive as well. I have a few family members who are very supportive. The rest of my family is pretty conservative, not really familiar with the LGBTQ community or supportive of that. They were unsure of the transition. They didn't. They were explicit about not supporting it, but they were also very open about wanting to remain in his life. And so as his mom, I said, you have to respect my son, you have to support my son, or we're not going to be a part of your life. And so they've been very good about coming around and using the right names and the right pronouns, and we've sort of settled on, you don't have to agree with it, but you do have to respect my son.
Well, and I want to talk more about the experience that you went through. You live in Charles City, not a large town in Iowa, and I can imagine that that creates some additional challenges, also some additional support as well. So we'll talk more in just a moment. Jess Orcutt is here with me. She is the director and one of the founders of Transcend North Iowa, a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming individuals. Coming up on Friday, the very first transgender education summit in the state will take place. It's being put together by Iowa Safe Schools. Nate Munson is also here with me, executive director for Iowa Safe Schools. And you're welcome to join the conversation as well with your experiences, your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're getting a preview of the first Transgender Education Summit to ever take place in the state. It's on Friday in Des Moines, organized by Iowa Safe Schools. And with me today, Nate Munson, executive director for Iowa Safe Schools. And right now, I'm talking with Jess Orcutt. She is the director and one of the founders of Transcend. It's a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming individuals. She is the mother of a son who came out as transgender about 3 years ago. And just before the break, we were talking about how you dealt with that transition as a family emotionally and with some of the relationships that you have to navigate when someone goes through a transition like that. But as I mentioned, you live in Charles City, which is a town of about 7,500 people. So this is not a large community. How did things go at school?
Actually, much better than expected. My son has always been sort of a leader in his school, in his grade. And when he came out, he did it with gusto. You know, he came out and he said, this is who I am. And I would be happy to educate anybody who has any questions about it. And so everybody kind of took that as a cue and went along with it. And we actually had a really fantastic response from our school district, from our school system. He had a counselor who was very supportive, who was able to help him navigate some of the questions he had about changes in the school and how he could go about doing that. And the school, I think, had only dealt with one other transgender youth before my son. And so, and that student wasn't completely out. And so they had a lot of questions. a lot of the things that my son was going through were first for them as well. And so we sort of learned along with them. You know, they would discuss questions about what bathroom should be used, you know, what name and pronouns should start using, what's the laws regarding this, what are the policies we should put in place. And so we were able to really help influence how they put into place how they were going to deal with my son and future transgender students.
Did you feel like you had to educate yourself really quickly about what your son's rights were and how the school district should react?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been a member of the LGBTQ community for a long time, and when my son came out, I realized that I was woefully lacking in transgender education, and so I sort of took a crash course in it and learned exactly what my son's rights were and what we could do to help make his journey as smooth as it possibly could be.
And you started looking for local resources for other people you could connect with. What did you find?
Not much, to be completely honest. The closest support group we found was about 45 minutes away, and they met on school nights pretty late in the evening. And so we realized that that wasn't going to be an option for us. We weren't able to find any gender therapists in the area. We sought out doctors who were knowledgeable in the field and really found that there were just very, very few resources for transgender people. And so we really relied on the internet and sort of organizations like Iowa Safe Schools to educate ourselves.
And at some point you decided that you needed to form your own organization. That's where Transcend came into play, right?
Yes, exactly. We discovered, that my son was not the only trans kid in the area, and we saw the need for a resource like an organization like Transcend. And so we started with just a support group in Charles City that met every 3 weeks. We had pretty low attendance to start with, but then we started seeing people sort of coming out of the woodwork and utilizing this resource. And so we really grew pretty rapidly because it was such a needed resource in the area.
Tell me about what you've been able to do with Transcend. What kind of resources are you able to provide?
So right now we have support groups in 3 different locations in Iowa, and we are looking to expand because we've had so many people ask us, is there any way that you could do a support group in this area? Is there any way that you could get it closer to this area? We have a clothing closet, which is we take donations of clothing, makeup, accessories, and that's free to transgender, non-binary, or gender non-conforming people who would like to expand their wardrobe or transition their wardrobe into something that better matches their gender identity. We do trainings in schools and in communities. We have gatherings. We had an LGBTQ game night where we just invited anybody who is part of the LGBTQ community to come in and play games with us and have some snacks. We do holiday parties. We had a Halloween party, and we have an upcoming fall family feast and midwinter merriment. So those are both open to LGBTQ as well as allies.
So as you're holding these events, you're also interacting more with the community. I know that for your Halloween party, you asked for donations for prizes from a number of different businesses. So how is the community of Charles City and surrounding communities, how are they responding to Transcend?
Very positively. We have seen very little pushback from the community and just an overwhelming amount of support and excitement about what we're doing. Charles City especially, we were going around asking for donations, and I think out of probably 45 people that we asked, we only had one hard no, and the rest of them were just so eager to help and asking questions and showing their support and their enthusiasm for us having events like this and saying that it was long overdue. So we were very pleasantly surprised by the response that we've received from such a small community.
As a mother, do you have other mothers, other parents that you have been able to connect with to talk about what you're going through? Because, obviously your son has gone through a great deal, but so have you.
Yeah, it's been really fantastic. Having Transcend has really connected me with other parents who are in the same boat and who have gone through the same sort of feelings and experiences that I've gone through and been in different stages. So I've met parents who are just beginning that journey and who have those same doubts and questions that I had. I've met parents who have been on that journey for a very long time and so are a little bit more well-versed in it and can give me advice. And it's been a really fantastic experience to sort of see people and be able to offer each other that support and that advice that I think that we need just as much, you know, so that we can be supportive to our children.
What would you say to a parent who is just starting this journey? What do they need to know?
To be supportive. That is the number one thing, that the number one piece of advice that I can give is just to support your child no matter what. Coming out on this path is not easy for a child, and having the support of a family makes it so much easier. I mean, the statistics are astounding when it comes to kids in the LGBTQ community who thrive and who are successful with family support. That's just the number one thing that can be just the make or break of a kid coming out on that journey. So educate yourself would be number two. There's plenty of resources out there with books, internet, you know, and we're trying to do as much as we can when it comes to educating the community, educating the schools, educating parents. And just that education, I think, makes it so much easier for a parent to be as supportive as they can be.
What do you think Booker would want young people to know? Somebody who might be starting this journey themselves, or maybe they're not young, just someone who's starting this journey.
That living truthfully is the absolute best thing you can do for yourself. I think, and we as parents saw that before he had come out, he was living, I don't want to say untruthfully, but he definitely wasn't living the best life that he could be living. And we saw a lot of mental health issues, a lot of depression and anxiety. And when he finally came out, it was almost an overnight turnaround where he was just so much happier. He just acted like this burden had been lifted off his shoulders. And I think he sees people who are in the same boat he used to be in, where they're just sort of weighed down by this inability to live truthfully. And I think he would want everyone to live as honestly as they can and be true to themselves.
And what would you say to other people, teachers, friends, who may not know what to say or how to react in a situation like this, where there's a young person you've known their whole life and suddenly things have changed, at least outwardly?
I think I would say that it hasn't changed as much as you might think. A person who comes out is not changing their personality. They're not changing the core of who they are. They're just being more honest about who they are. And a name change and a pronoun change and some possible outward changes aren't going to change who they are inside. And so you just remember that they are the same person, and all they're doing is being more honest about who they are.
Well, Jess Orcutt, stay with us. We're going to talk more about some of the mental health challenges that members of the trans community struggle with, and also people who love them also can struggle with some of these mental health challenges as well. Jess Orcutt is the director, one of the founders of Transcend, a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming individuals. She lives in Charles City and is the mother of a son who came out as a member of the transgender community about 3 years ago. Also still with us, Nate Munson, Executive Director for Iowa Safe Schools. And now I want to bring Joby Holcomb into the conversation. Joby Holcomb is a licensed mental health care counselor and managing partner of Synergy Clinical Services. Hello, Joby.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And tell me a little bit about your involvement with the conference coming up on Friday.
So I'm here to present on different facets of mental health that do impact the transgender community. Specifically, we can go into more specific types of disorders, but in general, what I'm going to be presenting on is taking a look at what individuals, not necessarily from our professional experience, but from the research out there that we know individuals who are transgender do experience. And so we would like to provide participants just an overview of kind of what that looks like, and really help individuals, whether it be teachers, principals, administrators, counselors, anybody who's attending to really understand exactly what some of our transgender youth experience and how this can impact, you know, not only their lives inside of school, but also outside of school.
Well, and let's start sort of at the beginning of this journey. Let's talk about gender dysphoria. Give me a definition. What does that really mean?
Well, if we take a look at gender dysphoria in kind of its general in general terms, basically an individual who experiences something like gender dysphoria is really experiencing number one, an awareness that what they are feeling as far as their true identity and what they see that it's incongruent, which presents a lot of concerns for that individual. A lot of times, because there is that incongruency, and it's very aware, especially when it comes to physical attributes, we might see individuals who experience what could look like depression, symptoms that could look like attention deficit disorder. We can see individuals who experience that as a form of trauma. So being able to kind of tease that out to say, here's exactly what it looks like, it really is dependent upon that person, where they're at in their development, and really how aware they are of what they are experiencing.
So I can imagine, as a mental health care provider or a parent, seeing these symptoms, the anxiety, the depression, it must be very difficult in some cases to really connect the dots and understand what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why we tend to tackle this as a team approach as much as we possibly can. You know, so working with different organizations like Iowa Safe Schools, working with family members, whether that be, you know, biological family or whether it be extended family, working with educators, whether that's a school counselor, a principal, or a teacher, because we want to be able to get feedback from lots of different people about how they experience that particular individual throughout the day, because that helps us to really be able to understand that person. You know, we get them for, you know, sometimes an hour per week in our office. Well, sometimes that's not enough. So we do rely on a team approach.
So what are some of the other symptoms that can lead you to understand what's going on? Because if a child can't express it themselves, what might be some of the things that they would be saying or talking about that might lead you to explore this possibility?
Well, oftentimes what we hear is we get a lot of really good feedback from, especially from family members, parents, siblings who are supportive. We tend to hear different messages, and again it's really, I know this isn't going to necessarily specifically answer the question, but it really is dependent upon the individual. It's dependent upon the teenager, the adolescent, the child, and again that individual's awareness of who they are and where they're at developmentally. So it ranges from, you know, something about, well, you know, I hate who I am. You know, sometimes we do hear that message coming in when an individual comes in to see us, all the way to some, you know, for some individuals, it's I just don't feel right. I don't feel right about who I am, and really kind of anything in between. So it's not necessarily this kind of, you know, here's a typical response. It's more of, it really depends upon that person.
We are learning so much more about transgender and gender fluidity and what that means. We were talking earlier, I asked Nate about how common it seems to be among students in Iowa, and he used that 1-3% number. But as we're learning, do you feel like we're learning also that it's a lot more prevalent than we ever might have guessed before?
Absolutely. And I'm going to talk about it based on my professional experience and based on some of the colleagues that I work with on their professional experience as well. We tend to see a lot of individuals, you know, who present for services, whether it's for, you know, being able to help them understand a little bit more about themselves, whether it's that individual really wanting to transition, but really unsure as to kind of what they want that transition to look like, whether it's going to be purely a physical transition or whether it's going to be simply, you know, just in terms of gender expression, whether it's going to be, you know, looking maybe a little bit more masculine, you know, as we define it.
We'll talk more about that in just a moment. We'll be back in a moment. We're talking about the upcoming Transgender Education Summit taking place Friday in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up on Friday, the first Transgender Education Summit in the state will take place in Des Moines. It's been organized by Iowa Safe Schools. And this hour, we're talking about some of the issues that transgender individuals in Iowa face and also how schools, how communities can support, need to support these individuals, some of the resources available, and a lot of the questions that are still out there as people are learning about what it means to be transgender or gender fluid. With me is Nate Munson, Executive Director for Iowa Safe Schools. Jess Orcutt is here, the director and one of the founders of Transcend, a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming individuals. And Joby Holcomb is also here, a licensed mental health counselor and managing partner of Synergy Clinical Services. And Joby, before the break, we were talking about some of the challenges that transgender individuals face, also those who are supporting those individuals as they deal with gender dysphoria and decide how they want to present themselves. I also want to ask about some specific concerns. Once someone begins to understand that they are experiencing gender dysphoria or that they are a member of the trans community, it's not like that's necessarily an instant solution to what they've been struggling with, because coming out as trans can also be scary and difficult and even, sadly, as we've learned, dangerous as well. What are some of the specific concerns that people who are working with these individuals really need to be focused on as they help someone through that transition?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I believe that it's really important to be honest and upfront when we are working with an individual who identifies as being transgender or who is sharing that they are transgender, because when somebody is thinking about going through, for example, hormone replacement therapy, it is important for that individual to consider, you know, all of the positive things that can come along with being able to transition. But it's also important to take a look at, you know, what are some of the things that may not be the best, you know, whether that's going to be experiencing rejection from family, whether that's going to be experiencing, you know, potential issues related to physical safety, whether that's going to be an onset or an increase in exposure to bullying. So we really want to make sure that the individuals that we are working with have all of that information as we work with them, whether their goal is to go through hormone replacement, whether their goal is to you know, go through surgery. So whatever their goal is, we want to make sure that individual is able to process all of that information to really have a realistic idea of what it could be like. What is the potential to for that individual to be like once they do go through a transition?
Well, and Jess, I want to bring you back into the conversation as a mother. When your son decided to transition or came out as trans, I can imagine that all of those fears about what he could encounter were very present in your mind.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, we're very aware of the level of violence that transgender people can experience, and as well as bullying, you know, people just not accepting them, discrimination. And so when he came out, of course, one of my very first thoughts was, you know, that his life was going to get harder. And as a mother, you don't want to see that for your child. But I also understand that him not living truthfully would have been much more difficult. And so as a parent, I feel like it's my responsibility to do something to make the world a little bit safer for him. And so when we do trainings and when we do advocacy, that's one of our major goals, is to reduce the potential of violence and the potential of bullying for the LGBTQ community, because my son is part of it. And I don't want to see anybody's child hurt, but it's definitely very personal with my son.
When you first heard about the murder of Kadari Johnson in Burlington last March, and again, for those who don't know, a 16-year-old who lived in Burlington, he identified sometimes male, sometimes female, and was very open with classmates and people in the community, well-loved by many members of the community. When you heard about his murder, what was your response?
I was heartbroken. I mean, to think of anybody, anyone's child being murdered is just—it's completely heartbreaking. I don't even have the words to describe how horrible it is. And of course, you know, I immediately drew the correlation between, you know, that and my own child and the potential violence for that, and as well as the kids that we work with through Transcend. I've become very close with a number of them, and have seen, you know, the threats of violence from their own family, the threats of violence from inside their school, from bullies and from classmates who don't really understand. And so that really hit home, and it really brought to the surface the reason we do what we do. And it really cemented the fact that we need to be out there advocating, you know, not just us, but we need to be putting that information in the hands of people who can also go out and advocate. We need to be educating parents so that they can be on the forefront protecting their kids. And I just think that it brought up the issue that we all need to be advocates, because these things do happen and they shouldn't be happening.
And Nate Munson, one of the sessions that will be held at the summit on Friday is called Transgender People of Color, Considerations in Service Provision. And of course, Kadari Johnson was also a person of color. Is that a community, transgender people of color, is that a community that is particularly at risk?
Last count that we had, there were about 24 murders of transgender individuals in the United States just this year alone. And most are of trans people of color, especially trans women, male to female identified individuals. And they face very much higher rates of victimization, hate crimes. Many of these incidences go unreported, so it's believed that number is a lot higher. And seeing that violence, whether that's a hate crime or sexual assault. There's even there's an estimate that 1 in 2 transgender individuals will be sexually assaulted in this country. And so that the acts of violence against the trans community is a very real issue.
And what should educators know? I mean, when they're working with a student who's a member of the trans community, I mean, do they need to have that background and say, okay, let's look at other risk factors with this individual? What are the dangers here?
Yes, it's really important that schools and educators and parents of transgender children, you know, we're looking at that kind of holistic approach, and it's kind of almost creating a safety plan for some if they feel that safety is a concern. You know, with Kadari, he had a loving family and school environment. And it was someone from the outside that victimized him, and so that's a very real issue. It's a very real concern. And so when we work with gay straight alliances and students who are trans and especially are trans students of color, we kind of take extra precaution in having that conversation about what resources are out there in terms of sexual assault or domestic violence. But also, you know, having that kind of it's a tough talk to have a real talk with a student about safety concerns. And they do have these safety concerns. These students do. They're very upfront about it because they do hear these stories in the news. They see things on social media about what's happened to the trans community.
Well, and another one of the sessions on Friday is about human trafficking, which is also a very real danger for members of this community. Tell me about some of the real vulnerabilities that young people who are members of the trans community face.
Yeah, so for human and sex trafficking, there's an estimate that 40% of all of our homeless youth in the United States, all homeless youth, are LGBTQ, and a significant portion of them are going to be part of the trans community, especially trans students of color as well. They may be kicked out of their homes. There might be conflict at home. Usually the foster care system is known as a feeder into this homeless environment, and these students are there by themselves, and they become easy targets for human and sex trafficking, especially trans individuals, because they become sex workers, essentially, is what happens to these students. And it's very scary for our students. And, you know, thinking about, like, you know, in rural Iowa, a student who's been removed from their home because maybe there's no familial acceptance, where do they go? You know, those kinds of issues that come up for these students. And so providing that support, whether that's through Transcend or through Gay Straight Alliances at schools, and helping educators understand to keep an eye out for these students so they can get them the resources they need is really vital.
You know, the fact that the LGBTQ community is particularly vulnerable to homelessness, as particularly teenagers, this is something that I've been talking about my entire journalistic career, and it doesn't seem to be changing, although there have been significant changes in our society as far as education, as far as acceptance, as far as laws. Nate, do you see this as something that's getting better, or is this problem just peaking?
You know, I think it might just be something that there's so many things that have gone unreported for so long. And finally, we're looking under those stones and seeing this whole community that's out there that has become forgotten, especially when we're looking at LGBTQ individuals of color that become very much at risk for homelessness. There's several documentaries that are out there about that experience and seeing it firsthand. We're finally talking about it more so. And you know, the research shows that it's not changing yet, but we really hope to see that we can reach a point in Apex where it does change.
And Joby, as a mental health counselor, you know, talking about how the students who have very difficult, even dangerous family situations sometimes due to their trans status are particularly at risk. The parents, the family, they're going through some mental health challenges as well. Jess was talking earlier, and obviously she's a very understanding, very educated, and supportive mother. But she talked about going through something of a grief process. I can imagine with less education, less understanding, that would be amplified as well. So what kind of mental health care do families of trans young people need?
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever we have an adolescent or even a child that comes in for services, we kind of already have it in the back of our head, as in the back of our minds, as what are we going to do to help the family, knowing that whether you know, a parent or the parents or the siblings are 100% accepting or still kind of on board, you know, but kind of passively supportive, or just don't understand at all. So a lot of times what will happen is we might have a therapist who will work with, you know, with the identified client, the individual who is coming in for services because, you know, there's something related to being transgendered that individual wants to work on. And then a lot of times what we will do is we will recommend that, you know, maybe mom and dad come in for services on their own, because a lot of times what we see is we see parents and even sometimes siblings. We see individuals who go through what we would classify as these adjustment disorders, because, you know, this is a big dynamic within the family system that is going to change the family system, and it not necessarily in a negative way, but in some very positive ways, as long as the individuals within the family, the parents, the siblings, you know, as well as the individual who identifies as being transgender, can all work together to make sure that system, while it might change, can still be functional.
We have this email from Angie. She says, thank you for having a conversation about gender. I wanted to share that I'm reading a new book about this and would recommend it to cisgender as well as genderqueer or transgender folks. It is gentle and non-shaming, she says. It's called How to Understand Your Gender by Alex Lintaffy and Meg John Barker. And that I think that that's an important question for all of you. If this is something that someone either needs or wants to educate themselves about, obviously the summit on Friday is a great place for educators. What are some of the resources that you would point people to understand what it means to be trans? Jess?
I would definitely, but there are some fantastic books out there. I would say schools, actually, I'm just going to promote them a little bit because they're fantastic, but they do a program where they have books available to people who are looking for a little bit more education, and they have just a really great list on their site that they can help get people in touch with those books. On our site, we have a huge list of books about gender identity and sexual orientation. And honestly, they're just getting that information in people's hands is so important because you can have lots of face-to-face conversations and you can, you know, learn things from different areas, but I would say books are probably going to be one of the absolute best ways to get that information.
Joby, what do you think?
I would also echo that too. You know, Iowa Safe Schools, we direct a lot of our family members to Iowa Safe Schools because they have really done a really, really great job just in terms of being able to identify a lot of different really, really good books and other resources, toolkits, as I would call them, you know, to help those individuals, help families to be able to understand it. You know, you can a lot of times we will have individuals, whether they're clients of ours or not, who will call in and want to speak to one of us just about, okay, you know, I'm looking for some books to help my 5-year-old child to be able to kind of understand a little bit more about what gender is. You know, what would be some books that you would recommend? And so often, you know, we will kind of do our own research as well.
Well, Joby Holcomb, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Joby Holcomb is a licensed mental health counselor and managing partner for Synergy Clinical Services. He'll be part of the Transgender Education Summit on Friday, organized by Iowa Safe Schools. Nate Munson, thank you.
Thank you.
Nate Munson is executive director for Iowa Safe Schools. And Jess Orcutt, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Jess Orcutt is the director and one of the founders of Transcend, a group dedicated to supporting transgender, non-binary, and all gender non-conforming groups. Again, the summit takes place on Friday, the Transgender Education Summit, organized by Iowa Safe Schools. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.